Section two, number six, case 24-125, Joshi, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Sure, so case 24-125, the complainant is Anju Kumar and the respondent is Rajesh Joshi, DVM. On January 19th, 2024, Otto, a 3-year-old male mixed breed canine, was presented to respondent on referral for possible foreign body obstruction. Respondent determined that the dog did not have an obstruction, however, he could not determine if the material of the stomach would resolve on its own. The complainant was offered to either hospitalize the dog overnight and re-image in the morning or perform surgery that evening. Respondent discussed the pros and cons at length with complainant. Complainant elected to have surgery performed on the dog. Surgery revealed a negative abdominal exploration. Complainant expressed concerns that the dog underwent an unnecessary surgery. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. I don't know who that is. Are you able to mute? I don't know if it's Dr. Bright or
Dr. I'll mute right now if it's me. Let me try that.
Okay. All right. So the lead. So Dr. Or Dr. And I.
Guy James. Dr. James Gold appearing for Dr. Joshi monitoring only.
Monitoring. Thank you. Joshi. Thank you. So Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Okay. In this case, very similar to another one we had today and the whole discussion about exploratory surgery and negative exploratory surgeries and so forth. In this particular case, the respondent made his recommendation and his medical decisions, and they were based on sound principles. And as we've discussed, even today, exploratory is certainly a tool we have for diagnosis as well as treatment. It was presented to the owner. The owner ultimately made the decision, signed the consent form. So in the particular case and how it was done, there could have been other avenues, but I think they were explained to the complainant. And they made their decision with the doctor, and the surgery was done. So I would agree with the investigative committee and dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss with no violation. Any other discussion? No? Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. And opposed? Motion passes. So now moving on to section two, number nine, case 24-128, regarding Benjamin Savard, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front row?
Yes. Case 24-128, the complainant is Alan Shear. The respondent is Benjamin Savard, DVM. On January 31st, 2024, a 5-year-old male Maltese Yorkie mix was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. Respondent performed dental radiographs and evaluated the mouth. Four teeth were extracted. The dog was discharged later that day with instructions to eat soft food and not allow the dog chew on hard kibble, bones, or toys. On February 4th, 2024, the dog chewed on a tube of pet toothpaste and began vocalizing in pain. The dog was presented to an emergency facility for evaluation. The dog required sedation, radiographs were taken, and it was noted the sutures had opened at one of the extraction sites. The dog was provided with pain medications and instructions to return to the primary care veterinarian the following day. The next day, respondent evaluated the dog, dental radiographs were performed, and a mandibular fracture was found. The dog was referred to a dental specialist. On February 6th, 2024, Doug presented to Arizona Veterinary Dental Specialist for consultation. Dr. Fink repaired the jaw fracture that day. Complainant contends that respondent extracted a tooth that was healthy, which led to the jaw fracturing. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismissed this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. Mr. Stoll, are you just
monitoring only?
Okay. So, in this case, I know Dr. Janes, you're the lead. Do you have the materials accessible to you?
Yeah. Okay. I think this case was it was unfortunate in that there were complications afterwards. It's hard to say what caused it, whether the dental was related and the dog bit down on, you know, a hard tube and maybe that complicated things. I mean, there was a lot going on, but ultimately I didn't see anything during the dental that I felt fell below the standard of care. I also felt like there was maybe some complications because the secondary opinion had said maybe that tooth could have been saved. But I mean, we extract teeth more often than we do advanced procedures in dogs, and I don't even know that most veterinarians in private practice would necessarily know, like, this is an advanced procedure, I could refer this. Like, I feel like this doctor used good medical judgment and did what was appropriate. So I just can't find anything that I think falls below the standard. So I would make a motion that we support the findings of the investigative committee and find no violations of our practice act or rules.
And I think that the one thing that was said, and you mentioned it, was the specialist said it maybe could be saved, but a healthy tooth versus could be saved are different things, because there was bone loss around that tooth that was noted. And this veterinarian did post-op extraction radiographs, and it didn't show a fracture, at least from what I could tell, but I'm not the best at.
Do we need a second to the motion prior to discussion?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll second.
Thank you. So I didn't, and the specialist didn't cite that either, that there was a fracture prior.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that's been said, but I did focus on that conversation between the respondent and the specialist, and did see some things in that that were a little concerning. The post-op dental radiograph, we can't see. It's this big. We see the one with the fracture, but we don't see.
Oh, that was the recheck, though, the one with the fracture, right?
Right. After. We see it after the fracture. Went to emergency. They didn't find the fracture. I'm not sure what. And then got to the specialist that we have a nice radiograph of the fracture. And it does give us some information there, but the post-op is just an icon and from the respondent. So we can't really determine anything, and it's important because that's the radiograph that tells us if anything was done wrong. So that was a little bit concerning to me. But based on the conversation between the respondent and the specialist, when you have these conversations with specialists, they are generally, if there's a question, they are going to be supportive of the referring veterinarian. If they've absolutely done something wrong, of course, and they're convinced of it. But there were some comments in this conversation that caused me to have some concern. The specialist said, well, based on the radiograph, I probably wouldn't have extracted, because there was some bone loss on one of the roots. This is a two-rooted tooth. It's a huge tooth. It supports the mandible. It's a major tooth, the 409 and the 309. So then the discussion revolved about, she said, but I didn't probe the tooth. I didn't evaluate the tooth. All I did was see the radiograph. And then the respondent said, well, there was a 3-millimeter pocket. And the specialist said, that's normal. So you can't use a 3 pocketing. And then he said it was furcated, but not all the way through. I couldn't get my probe all the way through, so there was some furcation. So when you take a 409 tooth that you're going to have to extract, major, the largest tooth in the lower IK. And then the specialist said, you know, that was a lot of bone removed, and then kind of glossed over that. So that was the key for me. Did he remove too much bone? Therefore, in order to get out a healthy rooted tooth, this tooth, in his opinion, had periodontal disease. It didn't have a tooth root abscess. So he was going to extract it based on periodontal disease. And now we're extracting healthy roots. If you look at the radiograph with the fracture, you can see that almost all of the lateral bone was removed in order to get that healthy root out.
Was that, Dr. Nosley, in your opinion, the cause of the fracture?
So I can't say for sure. We remove 409s from small dogs all the time. And yeah, we tell them don't give toys and don't chew on hard objects and that kind of thing. But a lot of them will run on, chew on furniture or grab a stick and run around. They don't fracture their jaw. So I don't know. I don't know is the bottom line. But some of the things that were said between the respondent and the specialist led me to believe the specialist believed that there was too much bone and this jaw fractured when the dog chewed on something, and the complainant admitted it chewed on a toothpaste, but she said not on the cap, and she would see teeth marks on the cap. So it bit into a soft tooth and it's fractured his jaw. And when I read that, I went, wait a minute, well, how did that happen, or why did that happen? So that's why the conversation between the specialist and the respondent had a lot of meaning for me. And I think that
I think it does too. Sorry about that. I thought you were finished.
Yeah, I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with you. I thought that too. But what I would say is, I think we have to always keep in mind, one, private practitioners are not specialists. They aren't at the, specialists are going to have a little more knowledge and a little different perspective. This also was looked at in hindsight. So we have to be careful about that, because if this had not been pulled and the tooth had started causing a problem, the specialist would have said they should have pulled this tooth. You know, so I feel like we have to go with, rather than going with the specialist after the fact, we have to really look at, did this doctor do something wrong? And I feel like we could argue back and forth. I mean, so many different opinions on when you extract a tooth and when you don't. And I just feel like I felt like this doctor use decent judgment to decide to pull the tooth, and you know, not every extraction is going to go well. It is a side effect. I mean, I don't know that I could say it fell below the standard of care.
Okay. All right. Well,
but I mean, I think that's really good discussion, and you know, I'm totally open to entertaining a different motion if somebody wants to make a different one.
Okay. Well, let's vote on the motion that we have. That's seconded. So all those in favor, aye.
Of the motion that you stated.
Oh, the motion that you made to
no,
dis.
I didn't.
Oh no, Dr. James.
Dr. James.
To dismiss with no violation.
No violation.
Yeah. Right.
Right. That's the motion.
Yes.
Okay.
So ready to
vote. Yeah, I made the motion.
Okay.
So ready to vote. All those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Sorry, on the phone.
Dr. Wright?
I think they were both A.
Yes, I said aye. Sorry, must have been with the whole group, though.
He was aye.
Okay.
Oh, he was aye.
Yes. And any opposed? Okay. Motion passes to dismiss with no violation. Okay. So moving on to Section 2, number 11, case 24-156, regarding Heather Sanchez Sculpti, DBM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes. Case 24-156, the complainant is Stephanie Neal. The respondent is Heather Sanchez Scoltetti, DVM. June 23rd, 2024, Chowder, a one-year-old male corgi, was presented to respondent for limping and lethargy. The dog was presented to the emergency facility the previous evening for vomiting and lethargy. The dog was discharged without treatment. Respondent recommended dropping the dog off due to high volume of patients that day for radiographs. The pet owner approved. Hydrocodone was administered to the dog to assist in performing radiographs. The dog was still resistant, and another dose of hydromorphone was administered. Due to the dog still resisting, respondent obtained consent to sedate the dog, which was approved. The dog was sedated and abdominal and leg radiographs were performed. A rock foreign body was identified in the abdomen. No abnormalities with the right rear limb was found. Respondent recommended hospitalization and possible surgery that evening or the following morning, or transferred to another emergency facility. The pet owner declined and elected to take the dog home. Sub-Q fluids, hydromorphone, and syringa were provided, and the dog was discharged. Complainant, the pet owner's mother, expressed concerns that the dog was at the premises for 9 hours without medical attention. No medical workup was provided, and the pet owner was not informed of the need for any additional care. And this case was brought straight to you for your determination, and it did not go in front of the investigative committee.
Thank you. So I am the lead on this case. So it's interesting because the complainant is the client or pet owner's mother. And Chowder was presented to the emergency practice I had noted on a Sunday. So to be dropped off is kind of unique, because typically, you know, when you're going through diagnostics, you know, at least in my experience, the client's there or, you know, part of the process. So it looks like to me that everything that was at least discussed with the client was there was follow through. There was some times where the veterinarian was having to re-communicate with the mother, which I can't imagine for an emergency doctor to stop everything again and go over what they've already said. So I think that was very kind. I also agreed with the veterinarian's decision to not have the team talk to them anymore, but only her, because of some discourteous verbal interchange. And she kind of put herself as the shield in front, which I appreciated. But I think that it was a little bit misguided in the sense that the dog didn't receive any medical attention, because in order to go further, you have to have the diagnostics, right? And to get the diagnostics, they were very conscientious about not stressing out or maybe even further injuring the dog, and maybe there was some proclamation that they should just hold the dog down, but I think that we've kind of learned better in veterinary medicine to not do that. And then there were recommendations once they did get the answers, but ultimately that was declined. Yeah. And the pet owner's right, you know, within their rights to do that. So I think a little misguided in the 9 hours without medical attention. There absolutely was a medical workup. There were recommendations made, and those were declined. So I would make a motion to agree with the investigative committee.
There is no investigative.
Oh, my gosh.
It just came straight.
Yep, never mind. Yeah. With my own notes. I would make a recommendation to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any comments or discussion from, I know veterinarians reviewed this case also. Yes. Seeing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We have one more IIR, and it is section 2, number 5, case 24-123. Velvet Edwards, DVM. Tracy, if you could read the front load, please.
Yes, case 24-123, the complainant is Barbara Levin, and the respondent is Velvet Edwards, DVM. On February 12, 2024, Sadie, an 11-year-old female Shih Tzu, was presented to respondent for a dental and extractions. The procedure was performed, and the dog was recovered and was discharged later that day. On February 14, 2024, complainant presented the dog to respondent's premises due to pain and swelling of the right side. Respondent suspected an insect bite or puncture from a plant, and the dog was treated with diphenhydramine, dexamethasone, and prednisone. Complainant saw improvement initially. On February 27, 2024, the dog was presented to Trilogy Veterinary Medical Center due to continued pain and an open wound from the dog licking. After evaluation, Dr. Schneier suspected the dog's wounds were related to a thermal burn, possibly from the recent dental procedure, and treatment was provided. Later that day, complainant visited respondent to relay Dr. Schneier's findings. Respondent advised that she had been warmed and The respondent advised that she does not provide heat support with heating pads or blankets. Staff explained that they use towels that have been warmed in the dryer to keep surgery patients warm. The dog returned to Dr. Schneier periodically for care and treatment of the wounds until March 21st, 2024. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. So no respondent, no complainant, and Dr. Janes, you are the lead.
Yeah, so this case was a tough one for me because, I mean, from looking at the report of what was ultimately happened to this dog, I would say it's really consistent with some kind of heating pad, heat, compressions, some kind of injury related to being down on that side. Certainly there are other options, so I can't say for sure that that's what it was, but it definitely was consistent with, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know which way, you know, the clinic is saying that they didn't use any of those devices, which eliminates, you know, kind of your top differential. And I have to trust that they wouldn't be lying about that, so I'm assuming that that wasn't used. I think what really inflamed this case was maybe some of the communication and the defensiveness about this potentially being related to the procedure that really upset the owner. So I think ultimately it comes down to this was a questionable communication issue. But again, I don't see anything that really fell below this, that, well, like, we've had this conversation a few times today, below the courteous verbal interchange, or whether it just was said in a way that was kind of offensive to the owner. I can't really tell. I listened to kind of some of the recordings, and it was like I could hear that defensive nature, but I don't know that I could say it was below or not courteous. So, I mean, I guess at this point, while I have concern about how this happened and about the communication, I'd be leaning towards a motion of no violations. I don't know if any of the other committee members have thoughts on this one.
This is Dr. Wright.
Okay.
Oh, the thermal burns are difficult because you can have a thermal burn from when we see things like heating pads used and they're just getting too hot. But you can also have moderate temperature that wouldn't normally cause an issue. And like you were saying, we're laying on our side, we have compression of capillaries. If your body is not able to transfer that heat away by perfusing with blood very well, actually, a very low temperature can still cause a thermal burn. And that's not necessarily a violation. It's just one of those weird things kind of that all met up together and caused a problem. But yeah, I agree. I don't see a violation there, but I'm glad you brought that up because you can have thermal burns even from low temperatures that you wouldn't expect that from in some cases. That was all I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Dr. Jane, in the location, the timing, everything points to a burn. And unfortunately, I've had a case like this, a couple of cases, I guess, that I've treated on emergency and so forth. But early in my practice, I actually had this happen with a heating pad in my clinic with one of the associates, and we dealt with that horrible burn for a long time. But that shouldn't happen. Shouldn't happen then, but it should certainly shouldn't happen now, 50 years later or whatever. But looking at that photos, that was a burn. It was a burn, and a burn is either thermal or chemical, or maybe I could make a case for a toxic epidermal necrolysis drug reaction. I've seen some pretty bad ones of that, but the distribution on the dog. And so, did I hear you right, Dr. Wright? The respondent said there was no heat applied at all, so.
Warm towels.
So
a warm towel. Yeah.
No, warm towels to recover. There was no
recover. Heat. Oh, I'm sorry.
There was no heat applied at all during the procedure, is what the respondent said, and the technicians.
That's where I was like, I have to trust that they're not lying about this, but it seems very odd to me.
It seems very odd. What other explanations could we come up with? That complainant took the dog home and laid it on a heating pad.
But that other doctor felt like it was some kind of an insect bite, and I didn't necessarily agree with that. That wouldn't be the distribution, or it just didn't fit the history. I was like, I don't know. I don't think that that's what it was.
No, I agree, and that was. No, I think it was actually her. Yeah. The respondent that saw the dog and called it an insect bite. Well, and early on, before you get the slough, you might go that way. You got some swelling and some pain and a knot on the side there. You might, I guess, say insect. I certainly wouldn't think so. I agree with you there, but it's possible. But something burnt this dog. What burnt this dog? So I don't like calling respondents, my fellow veterinarians and staff. I don't say someone's lying here, but why are we here? So I would go to informal. That's where I'm at.
I have a question with Dr. Nosley.
Yeah.
Or Dr. James or Dr. Wright. Is there anything in the cleaning of the operating table that can cause a burn?
So that would fall under the chemical burn.
Right.
But this was a complete dermal slough. Okay. All the skin sloughed off on this dog. So I can't think of any product in a veterinary hospital used in the manner you're describing to cause that type of chemical burns. Chemical burns are usually the neighbor pouring something over the dog. That's a chemical.
And I've seen it in boarding facilities too, where they clean out the kennel and it's not dry, and the animal lays on it, and so it's laying on wet chemical, and it can slough large areas. But there's no reason a surgery table would have been a wet chemical area. Like, that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you've seen
it. Are you right in that the owner went home and felt like the dog would feel better on a heating pad? Like, I don't know. Maybe he was shaking and she felt that way, and that's where it happened. I don't know.
Yeah, and then why would she bring a complaint if she did that?
Right. Right. You wouldn't think so. I don't know. Right.
Okay. So, lots of questions. So, I would make, do we need to vote?
Oh, we don't have a motion yet.
So I would make a motion to move to informal.
Second?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I can second it.
Okay. Motion and a second to move to informal for more information. Mm-hmm. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? Motion passes. To move case 24-123 to informal. Okay. So now we can do call to the public. I feel like it's us.
Yay.
I wonder what they were reading.
I learned that not that long ago. I mean, they did say. Those wishing to address the board, you don't need to request permission in advance. However, the board may limit those persons speaking to this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so pursuant to ARS 38431.02H. The board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. Action on public comment matters that are not listed on the agenda will be limited to directing staff to study the matter or to schedule the matter for further discussion at a later date.
Are you timing, Madam Chair?
Certainly can.
Thank you.
Hi there. Since it's been a long day already for you guys.
All right.
Okay, sorry, super nervous. All right. I just want to say good afternoon. Thank you for taking the time to hear me out. My name is Dr. Lindsay Barenbach. I am here today to request a reopening of case 2410 regarding the revocation of my license to practice veterinary medicine in the state of Arizona. License number is 7229. I'm requesting this because the order states the decision was based on or due to a willful violation of CE requirements and documentation. I've written some letters to the board. They've been sent by email to Victoria Whitmore, requesting this case be open to allow me to speak on my own behalf. To speak on my own behalf regarding this matter. These letters, which I have for you today, explain in detail the basis for this request. So I know we're limited on time. I don't want to get into all of the details right away. I also have all of my continuing education certificates with me that I can prove that that requirement was completed by the original date provided from my original, the initial waiver request that you guys provided to me. So today I would like to respectfully request a stay of the revocation and to have this matter be put on the agenda for the November 20th board meeting so I can present my case in detail, allowing you to hear all the facts from my perspective as well. Thank you for your time and consideration. And do you have any questions for me?
We're not able to ask questions, but thank you for your statement.
I didn't know.
Thank you.
So I don't honestly know how this works. But I do have documentation that I would like to provide to you.
Okay.
I don't know how that works.
That would be to board staff.
Go to Victoria. Is this information in addition to what you previously provided the board?
It's all of my certificates that show that everything was done by the time.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm not sure what else.
Yeah, my only question is the information that you've got right now, mm-hmm. That's all information that you previously provided to Victoria, correct?
Correct.
Is there anything in those materials that have not been provided?
Well, that's why I'm requesting to have it be put back on the agenda so I can provide information from my perspective because I wasn't able to speak on my own behalf.
Right, no, I can.
Yeah. And there's reasons behind why I wasn't able to get the notice.
No, I understand.
And so that's where this is coming from. So I didn't prepare those details for today because my understanding was I needed to have this put back on the agenda and able to
correct
bring that information to you.
Correct. So there's nothing, though, that you have today that you want to submit to the board that hasn't already been submitted?
I just wanted to make sure that you had seen the continuing education certificates and everything was complete. And
okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. All right. We have let's see, section.
I was going to speak.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Hi there.
I'm Kimberly Bobian. I'm a DVM.
Hi there.
I'm currently licensed here in Arizona, and I just wanted to speak on behalf of Dr. Lindsay Birnbach. I have known her both professionally and personally for over a year now. I find her to be a very conscientious veterinarian. Because I have worked with her professionally, I know her work ethic. I know how she handles cases. I know how she treats clients. I know her devotion to the animals. And I am proud to call her a colleague. She's an incredibly smart individual. And sometimes she asks a lot of questions because she is so smart that she wants a lot of clarification and really wants to understand things. And I just want to just stand here before the board today, just really asking you to reconsider reopening up her case, because I think that she is an asset to the veterinary community in Arizona, and I would like to see her as a colleague again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we will go back to section four, item four, case 2496 regarding Michael Rice, DVM. Board may review, discuss, and take action on continuing education plan submitted in compliance with board order. Coupled up here. That's in the main agenda.
Yes.
And then we have the CE plan.